Some political leaders in Ohio have complained there are too many efforts to amend the state's constitution. A state senator from Hamilton County has a couple of proposals that he says could help address that problem while giving voters a bigger voice at the statehouse. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about those proposals and what they would do are Ohio State Senator Bill Blessing. Welcome back, Senator Blessing.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
And University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Political Science, David Niven. Thanks for being here, David.
My pleasure, Lucy.
UC is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. Senator Blessing, why, in your view, is it important to make it more appealing for citizens to pursue voter-proposed laws instead of constitutional amendments, and why bring this up now?
Well, the reason that I brought it up now was for just to have this out there for public inspection and so that people could see that there's a proposal out there to address it. But broadly speaking, a lot of the proposals over the years have been constitutional amendments. And I think that is simply because there is no security in the initiated statute process. The General Assembly could, just as easily erase whatever was passed at the ballot through that process. So reformers obviously choose the constitutional amendment route. But that has its issues too, in that once it's in the Constitution, it's very difficult to amend, obviously by design. So perhaps there's a middle ground that, Republicans and Democrats can agree upon, that go the initiated statute route with the proposal in SJR 5 or something similar. And it's easier for reformers to get it on the ballot, harder for the General Assembly to then overturn it after it passes. And if they do want to amend it, it's pretty much going to require bipartisan support, in which case that's I think, the right incentive that we want to put in place.
And talk about the specifics. How would it make it easier to get an initiated statute on the ballot and harder for lawmakers to change it once it becomes law?
Sure. So currently you would need, it's a very cumbersome process to go through with the initiated statute process. But broadly speaking, there's a period where the General Assembly, has an opportunity to amend, the Ohio Revised Code and maybe head that off in between. But they ultimately need 6% of the signatures of the last gubernatorial election to get on the ballot in the end. This proposal would cut that in half. And take it down to 3% and wipe out the part where the General Assembly has an opportunity to amend it. Because, let's be honest, by definition, if they're going to the ballot to begin with, it's probably because the General Assembly didn't act. So I wouldn't expect them to suddenly act in the middle of a campaign like that. So it cuts the signature threshold in half, which very, very appealing for reformers. The second part of it is once it passes, normally right now, the General Assembly can just, amend it or erase it with a simple majority. This would require a 60% threshold for the first 2 years after the measure passes. So what that means is that in order for the General Assembly to amend those sections that were passed at the ballot, now instead of 50%, they need 60% to amend it. And that period of time is 2 years. So after 2 years, it falls back down to the 50% threshold. The idea being that there should be a cooling off period for which the reform is able to, hopefully gain traction and see if it works.
David, what do you think about this approach? Do you think citizen groups, reformers have felt forced to use the constitutional amendment strategy to make change?
Well, absolutely. I think the bottom line is, Senator Blessing has explained, if you feel vulnerable to the legislature erasing your work, and then you would require this enormous work to get on the ballot, to pass the ballot, only to have it, erased, why possibly do that? And the consequence of this, in sort of basic terms, we have a bloated state constitution, as many states do. Our state constitution is 9 times as long as the U.S. Constitution, which sounds on its face a little bit absurd. It's not 9 times, more complicated to establish the structures and rights in a state than it is at the federal level. And just to give, a couple of examples, we had in 2010 a constitutional amendment to specify the address of the casino in Columbus. A constitutional amendment to specify the address of a casino. That's utter absurdity, but that's the kind of thing that winds up, you know, on the ballot these days. Even something like the minimum wage, which was passed with a massive majority among Ohioans, it went into the Constitution instead of as a law, even though that is almost the definition of a law. It's not a fundamental right or a structure of government.
And David, what difference do you think it would make for groups to have to gather fewer signatures, as Senator Blessing explained? Would that make these efforts and campaigns a lot less expensive?
It would make them a lot less expensive. You know, gathering signatures is just simply a gargantuan task. The logistics of gathering signatures, it requires, you know, under Ohio standards, you have to make essentially a statewide effort to gather those signatures. You're gathering not just the signatures required to get on the ballot, but a massive, you know, buffer set of signatures in case any of your signatures get thrown out for any, you know, infirmity. It doesn't mean they were bad signatures. The signature didn't quite match, or the person, you know, didn't put out their address correctly, that kind of thing. So in effect, this would cut the cost of signature gathering in half. And signature gathering is the single hardest part of getting a ballot question on the ballot and passing it.
We're talking about a proposal that would strengthen the power of citizen-led initiated statutes, and we're going to talk about another that would increase the number of state lawmakers in Ohio. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. Senator Blessing, let's talk about this other proposal that you have that calls for increasing the number of lawmakers in Columbus. Explain what that would do and your reasoning behind that.
This one's a little tougher for people to grasp. So it's really, you know, depends on how you look at it. It's described as increasing the number of legislators. I view it as having smaller districts. And, you know, the part of the problem with respect to, you know, issue one this past November and even our current redistricting process, they both made mention of this proportional representation that you want the General Assembly to the split between Republicans and Democrats to more closely reflect statewide elections. And it's not ironclad. It's not like we would expect 55-45 to always be the case. I mean, there's, you know, that's not easy to achieve, obviously. But this does it in an organic way. When you increase the number of legislators, when you take this to the limit, like just keep adding and adding and adding, what happens is it approaches the statewide split organically. So think about it this way: statewide election, 100% Republican, 100% Democrat. Statewide splits 55-45. That's about as far away from proportional representation as you can get. You go to the opposite extreme, which would be a direct democracy. That's going to be proportional representation by definition, because everybody, you know, Republican or Democrat would vote their own interests if they're a representative. But direct democracies obviously have their own set of problems. So obviously the answer lies somewhere in the middle. Now, my proposal is very modest. It would take the General Assembly from 33 senators and 99 representatives to 51 and 153, respectively. But what this would do is achieve proportional representation, or closer to it, I should say, organically and irrespective of who has the pencil. And there's some logic in this, in the sense that if you look at the Senate seats and the state rep seats, the state Senate has historically been, at least over the past 10 years, over 70% Republican, but the House has never been able to achieve that 70% threshold, even though Republicans have had the pencil for the past three or four cycles. And I think that's a function of the fact that the state rep seats are one third the size of the Senate seats. But in addition to that, people tend to prefer smaller districts nationwide. They're happier with their representatives from smaller districts. This definitely will make races a lot cheaper than they are now. The bigger the district, the more expensive they're going to be. And it also more firmly anchors legislators to their districts. And you'll find the representation in Columbus, by doing something like this, to more firmly reflect the electorate. So right now, if you look at the Ohio Senate, it typically skews older, wealthier, towards those who are, you know, own their own business and have passive streams of income. I think an approach like this would foster an environment where you'd see more teachers, more lawyers, more engineers, people that I think are a broader reflection of the electorate.
And Senator Blessing, where did you come up with those numbers? I think you said it would, under this proposal, it would increase the Senate to 51 and increase the state House of Representatives to 153. Where do those numbers come from?
So broadly speaking, Ohio has the fourth largest state Senate seats in the country, and we're the seventh most populous state. This just, it keeps us in the top 10 in terms of largest districts, which I would argue is a dubious honor, but this keeps us more in line with where our population is. So it's a 50% increase in the size of the General Assembly, but puts us more on par with where our population is. I think it puts us like 8 or 9 in terms of the largest districts, a very modest change. But this is also mirrored off a national movement that wants to increase the size of the U.S. House of Representatives, which, you know, for all the same reasons, and I agree with that as well.
What do you think of this approach, David?
Well, I think the argument that Ohio has unusually large districts, which is to say our representatives have an unusually large number of constituents, you know, is inarguable. You know, to put this into perspective, Montana has roughly the same size state house as Ohio. So Montana, with 1/10 as many folks, has the same size state house. So all the things that Bill just said in terms of it's harder to represent a larger group of people, it's more expensive to run with a larger group of people, I think all that is spot on. The argument that this is likely to help a little with the gerrymandering is a little bit sketchier because, you know, as Bill noted, it's absolutely true. If you had one statewide district, it would inherently overrepresent. And if you had 11.8 million districts, it would be inherently representative. But you could skew even an Ohio that you cut into literally 4 million districts, you could still skew it. So gerrymandering is a pretty powerful force. But I think the argument that Ohio is a bit of an outlier in the way we do things is inarguable. And, you know, think about this. Our legislature is actually smaller in number of seats now than it was in 1960, even though Ohio is 25% larger in terms of population.
We're going to talk more about that question of gerrymandering after a short break. And later in the program, we'll hear about the history of the Shillitoe's Elves. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're talking about a proposal that would strengthen the power of citizen-led initiated statutes and another that would increase the number of state lawmakers in Ohio. My guests are Ohio State Senator Bill Blessing and University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Political Science David Niven. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Senator Blessing, before the break, David was talking about his view on what this would or wouldn't do when it comes to gerrymandering. I want to get some more of your thoughts about that. What do you think that this proposal to reduce the number of constituents each lawmaker needs to represent and increase the number of lawmakers as a result, what could that mean in your view for gerrymandering and redistricting reform?
So to be clear, Professor Niven is correct that it's sort of a niche reform in the sense that it's really focusing on, one particular piece of this, which is the proportional representation issue. So in any case, I would tell people that this is something that I think can be piggybacked onto any redistricting reform. Had issue one passed and this were in place, I think it would have helped issue one. I think it could help, what the governor has been talking about with respect to potentially doing an Iowa plan. So, in the end, I think this is just, a smaller piece of a much larger puzzle. But I would be remiss if I didn't point out, sort of the politics of this from the standpoint of, yes, issue one failed in November. But now with Republican unified control of Congress and the State House, as I'm sure you've surmised, that the the tailwind for Republicans will become a headwind. So I would suspect 25, 26, 27, and 28 are going to be much harder years for Republicans. I do believe that redistricting reform will come back, you know, presumably at the ballot in, you know, I don't know, 26. I can't speculate when that would be. But in all cases, the governor has signaled interest in doing some reform. And I think that is actually wise, because if the General Assembly doesn't act, I'm not so confident that it's going to win at the ballot in 25, 26, or 27. So the gambit, I think, for Republicans is right now to demonstrate we can lead, come up with some sort of redistricting reform. Obviously, I would want to see SJR 6 as part of that, but it would demonstrate that they're leading in this case and working with reformers, however difficult that may be, but to get something on the ballot their way, as opposed to, you know, winding up in a position where they haven't acted and then something is on the ballot and they lose and that's that.
David, I want to get your thoughts on the politics, but first, could you just briefly explain for our listeners who aren't familiar with what issue one would have done that did fail on the November ballot and what this Iowa plan is?
Well, issue one would have created a citizens panel to draw the districts. It would have been five Democrats, five Republicans, five from neither party. They would sit around a table, draw districts, and they would not have been able to act without a multi-partisan coalition. Democrats couldn't control the situation. Republicans couldn't control. What Iowa does and what worked in Iowa for a very long time was they had a nonpartisan group of legislative research experts draw the districts. They had no partisan agenda. They were experts in Iowa. They drew the districts, and the legislature effectively had veto power over what those, you know, bureaucrats came up with. And for the longest time, they didn't use that veto power. But in 2021, they used that veto power and they took what was planned to be a fair map, what had historically been a fair map. And they actually created one of the strongest Republican gerrymanders of a state legislative map in the country. So the Iowa plan works as long as the political leaders are of goodwill. But it ultimately reserves the power to the legislature to say no if they want to. And certainly recent history in Ohio suggests that if we were to adopt the Iowa plan, you know, that future Speaker Huffman and others would likely not give our Legislative Research Commission the final say. Hmm.
And David, what do you think about the politics that Senator Blessing just addressed? That, you know, I mean, some people would look at this and say, Senator Blessing's a Republican. Republicans have a supermajority. Why would a Republican be proposing these things? But he's saying, hey, you know, the politics are going to shift or could shift, and we need to look at this. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, let's start with a very important point, which is almost every reform of, say, the ballot question process, every idea Republicans have advanced has been to make it harder, to put up barriers to silent citizens. So this is an extraordinary proposal in that it's making it easier. This isn't actually opening the door instead of closing the door, which is distinct in Ohio and across the nation. And this proposal to increase the size of the legislature is at absolute worst, a neutral proposal. So these are two ideas from a Republican, but they're not for Republicans. I think they're legitimately for Ohio. And I think, you know, in this moment, that is a pretty extraordinary, you know, outcome, because so many ideas have been advanced with an obvious partisan gain. Now, in terms of playing the long game, I think Senator Blessing is right to suggest, you know, this is a high water moment for Republicans nationally and in Ohio, and the normal midterm shrinkage of a party in office is likely. And, you know, I think, you know, he made a good point yesterday during debate on the Senate floor, which was Republican legislators in Ohio pushed so hard on abortion that they got the opposite of what they wanted, because they went way beyond the mandate of Ohioans. And I think that's ultimately the issue. And I think in small ways, these two ideas touch on that, making an Ohio legislature that's a bit more responsive to the average Ohioan.
Senator Blessing, at the same time you're proposing these two Senate joint resolutions, Senate Republicans have added provisions to this House bill that would give the Attorney General more authority to refuse to approve titles of petitions and summaries for citizen-led reforms. What do you make of that? You know, how does that idea factor into what you're trying to do?
Well, yeah, I had some concerns with that myself, obviously, going into a bill and lame duck. It is the nature of the beast. I mean, I guess we'll see with this. But I mean, if that is used in ways to block reform in good faith, I think, you know, reform is going to find an avenue. And, you know, let's say that that is used to beat back reform. And again, I would be very surprised if it was used as a very heavy bludgeon, because it's going to ultimately impact folks that are running statewide. So 26, I think, is going to be a tough year. Is it really a good look to, you know, use that to block reform? And I think people see that. And if they think it's being used in bad faith, it's just going to negatively reflect upon, folks actually running for office.
David, did you view that move as an effort to just make it harder for citizens to put forward ballot issues?
Absolutely. I mean, we saw with the current Ohio Attorney General Yost that, you know, his office is a place where ballot questions go to die. And he found innumerable ways to block a proposal for a voter's bill of rights, including challenging the nature of the meaning of the word rights. And so empowering, you know, folks to stop the citizens' process, you know, is a very dangerous thing, because it then effectively takes the power away from the citizens and puts it in the office holder, which is exactly the opposite of the premise of the Ohio Constitution, which is that the voters have the final word.
Senator Blessing, you were talking about how the political winds can change. I guess I wonder, what, if any, lessons that you learned from your father are coming into play here?
That's a question I didn't anticipate. I will say this. When he started in the legislature in 83, and Senator Vern Sykes, you know, when he was giving his goodbye speech, mentioned this, that, you know, Ohio is a very different place in the sense that, you know, the Democrats had a supermajority. They controlled, I think he said, all the statewides or very close to it. You know, they had a majority in the Senate as well. I mean, they had unified control of state government. And, you know, Dad would tell you, he's like, look, it wasn't fun being in the minority for, in his case, it was, I think, 14 years, no, 12 years. And I think because of that, he tried to have good relationships with members on the other side of the aisle. And I've tried to take that to heart as well, because these things do shift. And, you know, it was just 10 years ago, looking at, you know, Eastern and Southern Ohio, you would see Democrat legislators from those areas. Now they're, you know, arguably ruby red. At the same time, you know, some of these suburban seats are definitely becoming a lot bluer and becoming more Democratic. So, you know, things could shift very quickly. So it would behoove any Republican or any Democrat to be, you know, quite adept at working with the other side of the aisle.
Does that kind of long view make sense to you, David?
Absolutely. And you know, I think Senator Blessing is right to say there are places like Delaware County, for example, just north of Columbus, that were the absolute reddest of Ohio and now are, you know, getting purple. And you know, Appalachian Ohio was, you know, competitive as recently as a decade ago, and it is absolutely red right now. I think the long-term forecast for Republicans in Ohio right now is very good, but there are still questions of accountability and responsiveness. And I think that's kind of the bottom line of what we're talking about today.
Senator Blessing, what's next with these two proposals, and what kind of reception have you gotten from other lawmakers about them?
So I will reintroduce these next General Assembly. I do want to find a Democrat joint sponsors, as well as hopefully a nice smattering of bipartisan co-sponsors. And for what it's worth, you know, I've had a number of Democratic lawmakers come up and say, we like this, we want to be on board with it, particularly with the initiated statute piece of it. But frankly, Republicans have been saying the same thing with respect to the increasing the size of the legislature, which might sound counterintuitive, but a number of these folks have run for Congress before. And you ask them, like, how do you feel about having somebody walk in there with, you know, a personal fortune of $30 million or so, and they're able to drop $2 million on the campaign and just basically erase all of your fundraising work. And they hated it. And they saw that, oh, you know, these larger districts definitely benefit, you know, folks who are very wealthy, being able to just wipe out competition in primaries. So I have had lawmakers on really some significant extremes come in and say that they want to be on board.
It sounds like that might be how you get things done, huh?
Well, I hope so.
Well, I've been talking with Ohio State Senator Bill Blessing and University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Political Science, David Niven. Thank you both so much for your time today, and happy holidays.
It's always a pleasure. Happy holidays, Lucy.
My pleasure. Thank you. Happy holidays as well.
Up next, would some mechanical sprites ease your holiday stress? We're talking about the Shillitoe's elves. This is Cincinnati Edition.